Stereotypes about people and groups of people influence how we perceive and treat them.
These negative stereotypes exist partially because of the media we consume.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
I believe we are in danger of being swamped by Asians. They have their own culture and religion, form ghettos, and do not assimilate.
They now outnumber our new traditional Anglo-centric settlers.
An arbitration against these Chinese mongrels. I'm saying that's because they're communists, because they shoot their own people, they haven't got a justice system, and they want to take over this country.
In today's episode, we want to go beyond these stereotypes and explore the actual stories and experience of Chinese women who migrated and lived in Australia.
Blabcoat is created by students from Western Sydney University. We're self-funded. You can support us by buying our merch. We have some really cool designs for phones, shirts, singlets, and more. Also give us a review on Facebook and on iTunes. And don't forget to share this episode with your friends and family.
We've got a long history where Chinese were settling here. Obviously, they were having children here.
That's Dr. Alana Kapp, a historical geographer at Western Sydney University.
You have to remember that the Chinese have been here since, you know, the 1840s is the earliest documented Chinese migrant. We think about Chinese New Year here in Sydney, which is a huge event now every year. You know, the government puts in so much money, it's a massive tourism boost. If we look back into our historical geographies, women were doing this in their homes with their families first. Yeah, so they were already establishing these Chinese traditions that we take for granted every day. Everybody loves going to have their local Chinese, don't they? And, you know, we think about all of those families who did that in the past. That's why we have, in every regional town in Australia, we have a local Chinese restaurant. And who was that established by? By the first migrants.
This is Channel 7 Melbourne, relaying to stations throughout Australia.
If you look at, you know, newspaper articles from the late 19th century, early 20th century, it's about the influx of the Chinese hordes, the Chinese coming to steal our jobs, you know, but still they're very much bearing the brunt of these anti-racist ideas that are coming through in our media and politics at the moment. Yep. It's always the greedy Chinese, isn't it? Yep. It's always the greedy Chinese, isn't it? Yep. The Chinese family that lives down the road from you, who goes to the local school and, you know, dad's a plumber and mum works in an office, are they the people who we should be writing about in the newspapers? So I think it's so important for us to look at our past, to understand our past, to critically analyse it so that we don't make the same mistakes.
Even people have Chinese friends, they think we are the same.
Really?
Yes. Actually, I got friend, she come to me and say, can I ask you some suggestion about how to dealing with Chinese people? And I was like, wow, that's a lot. What do you mean by Chinese people? How to deal with the Chinese people? Who these Chinese people are you talking about? You do know Chinese are different, right?
Sure.
Often we homogenize the migrant experience or the, you know, non-white experience, but these women came from a variety of backgrounds.
That's Alana talking about her research on the experience of Chinese female migrants after the removal of the White Australia policy.
As I said, some were migrant women, some were Australian born, some had parents who were very wealthy, some didn't. Some had parents who really wanted to maintain Chinese culture and traditions in the home. Others had parents who wanted to abandon it and fit into the Australian way of life. Yes, we had these migrants coming who were encouraged to lose or abandon their culture, but many of them still held on to it. And it was this almost like rebellion that established multiculturalism or continued that multiculturalism within a white Australia paradigm or discourse. So in fact, multiculturalism has always existed in Australia.
China has gone through tremendous change over the past decades. So the people and its values have also been changing.
So if we think about traditional Confucian culture, there is this idea that there's this universal way of being a good Chinese woman. You know, you stay at home, you obey your husband. If your husband passes away, you obey your sons.
This is something that Lindsay Leo, a master of research student at Western Sydney University, also said, "Respect her because she's a first generation Chinese migrant."
I think China has changed so much, even for my, I think it was difficult for my mom and the rest of the families. My father was the only person who supported me. In Chinese culture, nowadays, all these retired women, they gather together and they form dance groups. They do a lot of dance together. So she said she couldn't make it anymore. I said, why not? She said, because you are not married. How could I couldn't hang out with them. I'm so ashamed. And I think the society has given her a lot of pressure as well. I remember I was with her one time when I was taking a holiday and bumped up with her, one of her friends, and she was with her daughter and grandchildren. So she, then the friend in front of my face and was talking to my mom and said, oh, poor you, your daughter was still not married, you need to hurry up, and then things like that in front of my face. I didn't feel ashamed at all. And then I've been telling my mom, I remember before I got married, I told her that marriage does not necessarily mean that you will be happy. She couldn't understand.
Did you feel that type of pressure as well as Lindsay did?
Oh, I have a different story. So I was married before I pursue my further studies.
But you know what she's talking about.
Yeah, definitely. I have a friend who is a judge now in China. And she told me all the shame she had from her family members. So she's in her early 30s and she's already a judge, but all her whole family can think of is that she's not married, and they feel shame on the whole family.
Wow.
On the whole family.
Wow.
On the whole family. Shame.
Wow.
Shame on the whole family.
Wow.
Shame. Shame. Shame on the whole family.
Blabcoats is created by students from Western Sydney University. We're self-funded. You can support us by buying our merch. We have some really cool designs of phones, shirts, singlets, and more. Also give us a review on Facebook and on iTunes. And don't forget to share this episode with your friends and family.
The media plays an important role in the stereotypes we have. In China, the media's attitude is changing when it comes to what a successful woman looks like.
It's nowadays, it's all very changing. I think the media has influenced young people as well. So they are not saying that all these women who are pursuing their careers are bad. I think they are trying to do a balance at the same time as well.
Yeah.
So they encourage women to pursue their dreams and to pursue their careers. But from time to time, you would say that those very successful ladies or media, if they are still not married, the same questions would pose to them about whether they are happy or not, that they've given up their family life or their private life to their jobs.
But as with many, many migrants who move around the world, often they move to their new destination, their new home, because they want to live in a new way. They want to live in a way that is perhaps more freeing, or in a way which gives their children more opportunities.
A person living leave China doesn't mean that these kind of stereotypes doesn't follow them to Australia. In fact, they may face even more challenging stereotypes in the workplace or in daily life, such as, you know, there's a bamboo ceiling in terms of...
What's that?
...career progression. Bamboo ceiling is that people coming from Asia background, they find it's challenging to progress in westernized culture and, multicultural workplace.
So you're saying that the bamboo ceiling exists because someone might not have the cultural competencies and the language competencies, and so that hinders them from progressing in their career? Because that's something that Lindsay said.
I think mostly there is a bamboo ceiling there, but I think it's because of, I would say, my limited knowledge of the mainstream culture here, or sometimes even though I have lived here for such a long time, I feel comfortable using the English, but still I still feel like there's a very gigantic gap.
Even somebody like the second generation of migrants, they were born in, for example, Australia or America or Canada, they grow up here and they have the similar culture competency with locals, but still, when they progress in the workplace, it's kind of really challenging for them to go a little bit further beyond the manager role.
Yeah, that's I would think, like, because when we spoke to Alana, she said that this was quite blatant when it came to young Chinese girls and their experiences, their teachers telling them that they couldn't do something.
Yes. And I had a lot of women who had grown up in Australia and gone to high school in Australia tell me that when they, you know, were finishing up their final exams and they'd have careers advice from their teachers, the teachers would ask them, oh, what do you want to do when you leave? And, you know, these women I spoke to would say, oh, well, I want to be a teacher, or I want to be, you know, XYZ. And these teachers would say to them, you can't do that. Why? They would say, why? Because you're Chinese. Their employment opportunities were already somewhat dictated to them from an early age. But when it came to career opportunity and perhaps promotion, some women found lots of difficulties. You know, it would be white male colleagues who would be advanced faster than them. They would be told that, yes, apply, but, you know, there was actually no reason for them to apply because they would never actually be considered. So again, that cross-section between their ethnic or cultural identity and their gender. So I'm not sure, you know, which one was operating there. Perhaps it was both. So in fact, one participant in particular who had that experience, she called it a double-edged sword. She said it was very difficult for her to negotiate her race and her gender in her employment.
Is it as blatant now?
Maybe now it's more subtle, and they wouldn't say, you know, that's kind of something they wouldn't put out there and say straight away, but more like in a subtle way saying, oh, maybe you're not that kind of social, and I don't know.
So Hamid, tell us what you learned from Yinghua.
A few things. Number one is that stereotypes have real world consequences. It really does affect how we treat and view people, and that we shouldn't let our monkey brains jump to conclusions about people and judgments, because that's something that, you know, that we've developed as human beings over thousands of years, because we lived in tribal societies and communities.
I guess it's easy to always, like, just jump to that knee-jerk reaction, but taking a second to think about it and process it and think rationally can take a bit more effort sometimes.
Number two, I was shocked to hear how similar Chinese culture is to my own culture, Afghan culture. It's interesting because the perception of what it is to be a successful woman in Afghan culture is changing, particularly amongst the migrant communities in Australia. But there is still tremendous pressure on women in my community to get married and start a family. And similar to Chinese culture, if you have a career without a husband, then people tend to look down on you, which is quite sad, I think. And number three is that don't let the media scare you into hating people.
Screw the media, man.
Because they love doing that, right? That's how they get viewers. Yeah. That's how they get people to make money. So
you're saying we should all turn off the media?
Except for Blab Goats. Definitely don't turn us off.
Blab Goats was created by Hamid Siddiqui and Alex Ray. This episode was produced by Yinghua Yu and Hamid Siddiqui. Special thanks to Dr. Alana Kemp, Lindy Leo, oh, I messed it up, Leo, and Alex Ray, and Raisov. If you like what we do, then please support us by reviewing us on Facebook and your podcast app, sharing this episode with a friend. We also have merch. You can also get some slick art designed by the talented Michael Horgan, who does our art.